For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
You're listening to Love Sport and a specially extended Wimbledon fan show. We are with you all the way through until 10 o'clock on this Sunday evening. I'm Alex Crook. Joining me in the studio is Lee from the 9 Years podcast. Lee, very good evening to you. It's been a good weekend, hasn't it, with that win
good
yesterday?
Evening. Yeah, very good. Yeah, I'm very happy at the moment. We're on fine form. And it was a great win yesterday. A tough place to go, Scunthorpe, and I thought we'd done very well up there. And yeah, to take 3 points, it was a bit of a battle in the end, but yeah, we got the 3 points, and that's all that matters at the moment.
Always a difficult game when the opponents have changed their manager, as Scunthorpe, of course, recently did, bringing back a club legend, somebody who took them into the playoffs in League One last season. I was there, actually, as they lost in the semi-final against Rotherham. That added an extra dimension, so you must be delighted that your team have found a way to come through that.
Yeah, I am. As I said, it was a tough second half because we were 2-0 up and then they scored. They put a lot of pressure on us. And as you said, with a new manager, you can sometimes get that new manager bounce and stuff. But I think Wally played it very well with the team selection, bringing Hansen in. He's looked at it. They've got two big centre-backs and thought that he could do a job for us. They've got no width, really, so they play a diamond. So I think we've gone with getting the 3-5-2 and getting Hansen on the ball as much as possible and getting Pig supporting. So yeah, it was a great result, to be fair. And that's, as I said, we're on fine form, other than Gillingham, which I believe was just a hiccup. Yeah, we're doing all right, and we're hopefully going to be moving further up that table as well.
Three goals in two games for James Hansen. Mm. Only three in his previous 58 appearances. What's clicked in the last couple of weeks?
I think he's just come back and he's hopefully fully fit now. He's been out a lot this season due to injuries. He struggled with his injuries for the last couple of years. And a fit James Hansen is a very good League One striker. But yeah, he has struggled with injuries. And I just think we've got the players now that can put the ball into the box for him. Wordsworth put in an absolute beauty of a free kick yesterday, straight on his head. Bang, Piggott again. Him and Piggott do play very well with each other. We won 1-0 at Gillingham away, and he hit the bar, and him and Piggott were unplayable that day, but unfortunately he got injured and he's been out for the season. If he's fit, then yeah, I think we've got a solid squad now with the fitness coming back. So
it's very much a northern boy, isn't he, James Hansen? My understanding is that his family are actually still back up north. He's living in a hotel. Mm. Do you think that's had any kind of impact? Just maybe struggle to settle down south?
I think it would do as well, especially with the injuries. It's got to be quite lonely when you're injured and the team are playing week in, week out. You're not training either. And yeah, his family are up north, and it's going to be just phone calls to them and FaceTime and stuff like that. But yeah, I think with the injuries, it is going to be a struggle. Hopefully he can get fit, he can get his family down here, and hopefully next year he can kick on whatever league we're on. I believe a fit James Hansen is a very good player for Wimbledon, especially with the players that we have around him. So hopefully, yeah, now he's playing and he's getting confidence, he's scoring goals. That's only going to help him and help us.
Last time I did the show a couple of weeks ago, you just had a good away win at Southend. That was disappointing result at home in between another away win. Why do you think at the moment you seem to be playing better and picking up results away from home and struggling a bit in front of your own fans?
I believe as well the teams we're playing are down there as well, so they're scrapping. So when you're at home, you seem to come out a lot more. So they're coming out against us, and we do play very well. We're hard to beat at the moment. We're very good defensively. But that gives us counter-attacking football that we're very good at, with players like Connolly, Falevi, McLaughlin, Wagstaff. We can get in behind teams. So where we're hitting teams on counter-attacking football, I think that's helping us a lot more. I'd like to see us at home even set up a little bit defensive now, let teams come at us, and then we hit them on the break.
Five unbeaten away from home, only in the relegation zone now on goal difference. How confident are you of pulling off this great escape that a few weeks ago seemed unfathomable, really?
Yeah, a few weeks ago I said that we were down and that was it. I thought we were done and dusted, to be fair. We were 10 points. I think it was 17 points we were away from Scunthorpe. And now it's goal difference. And I think we're only 3 points away from Scunthorpe, or 2 points. I think it's going to happen. I think we are going to stay up. I really do believe. We've got the teams around us. We've got Accrington coming up on Saturday. We've still got to play Bristol Rovers. We've got Wickham at home, who are in dire form as well. Tough games against Luton and Oxford, but Oxford are still down there, I think. And then Bradford away last game of season. And there's still a lot of points to play for, and I believe that we're the form team. No one's going to want to play us at the moment. And I think, yeah, with the squad that we've got, everyone coming back to fitness, I think, yeah, we can do it.
Do you think, with the history of the club and the adversity you faced in the past, do you think that helps at this stage of the season? It's almost in your DNA, isn't it, is to rise from the ashes? Yeah.
I don't think it will help at the moment, because I think that all goes out the window. I don't think Accrington, look at Accrington's story and stuff like that, they'll just be thinking about their own story and how they've come up through the leagues with a very low budget, probably lower than our budget. I just think at the moment it's Wally, Glynn. They've got this bond with the players now, and the players do look like they're bonding much better than they did before under the old regime. Under the old regime, I felt that the players could possibly do whatever they wanted. They could go out on nights out whenever they wanted, lose eight in a row and just do what. Now, I believe with Wally at the helm, they're not going to take a mick anymore. They're just going to be there to play football. They want to play for him. They want to play for Wimbledon. They want to stay up. They don't want to be the team that took Wimbledon down.
And Wally Downs, you mentioned there, his record, 10 wins, 4 draws, 10 defeats since coming in. Looks a shrewd appointment, doesn't it?
Yeah, I believe if Wally had come in November, we'd be pushing for the playoffs now. I honestly do think, we'd be up there. It's something about him, he just loves it. I think he loves Wimbledon. I know he struggled previously when he was at Brentford, and he's only had coaching before. But it's just him and Glynn, I think they've got this. And with the team that we've got, they've got something there that's going to do well for us going forward in long term as well. They're getting the best out of Wordsworth. Hansen's coming back. Wagstaff's coming in and doing little bits. I just believe that we're going to do stuff with Wally. Even if it ain't this year, if we do go down this year, I think we'll go up next year's promotion.
Do you think the fact he played 200 games for the club, he gets the club, he knows your backstory, has that been a massive help?
Yeah, I believe so. Yeah, the fans are straight on it as well. There was a few fans a bit sceptical when he first come on, but now because he's getting points and wins matter, and the fact that he does love the club and the history that he has with the club, and also the history that Glynn has with the club as well, you can see that he's putting 100% into it. It's not just putting players in positions. He's looking. We're watching tapes of teams. We're actually scouting properly. We're getting players in, like for Levy from Watford, Connolly coming over from Ireland, and these players have been breathtaking for us. And I think that's a big thing for us. Where before we were just signing has-beens and players like that. But yeah, Wally and Glynn they're making it work.
I follow Wally's son, Wally Downs Jr. on Twitter. He's a sports journalist at The Sun, and his tweets do make me laugh. Yeah. There was one yesterday about how his dad's always been good at playing away from home. Yeah. Maybe a little bit close to the bone, that one, but I'm sure it went down with the humour it was intended. Time is just coming up for a 8:40 on this Sunday evening. You're listening to a specially extended Wimbledon fan show. We're with you all the way through until 10 o'clock. Coming up after the break, Mark from the 9 Years podcast will be joining us on the line.
Love Sport.
You're listening to the Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport. Lee from the 9 Year podcast is with me in the studio. I'm delighted to say Mark, also from the 9 Year podcast, has called us. Mark, what is it you want to say?
Good evening, gents. Just wanted to quickly pick Lee's brain about this, because I was listening in earlier and you were talking about how you think that it's the reason why our home form isn't so great. Is because we're you know, defensively more set up away from home and hit on the counter. What's your take on, do you think Kings Meadow, the pitch that we have, which is such high quality for League One, plays a part in that?
Evening, Mark. How are you, Lee?
Hello. Hello.
Hello. Can you hear us?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, he was just asking how you think the pitch, you know, being set up, played a part in that.
I said hello and he just ignored me. I was like, that's a bit rude.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I like to ignore you, especially when I walk past you in front of Kings Meadow.
Yeah, I know. No, I don't believe that, Mark. I believe that the pitch is set up brilliant for us. I think that with the players that we've got, especially at home, as I said, if you're going to attack teams, again, teams set up against us defensively. We've had it at home with Plymouth, Gillingham, things like that. They set up defensive. You think against Gillingham at home, we lost 4-2. We could have been 2-0 up before they even had a chance, before they even had a shot. I think at home, we've defensively made mistakes. Terrell's not been great. Rod's not had great games when he's come in. Will's been our
best player.
But that
kind of negates your comment then, because you say that at away we're defensively and we're solid, but then at home we make mistakes defensively. If we're defensive at home as well,
yeah. But what I mean by setting up defensively is that defensive mistake is just letting our midfield have the ball a little bit more as well. So that 3-5-2, we sit back and let the teams come onto us, and then we hit them on the counter. So we move defence into attack very quickly. Mm. Right, where at home I don't think we do that as well, because we do it better away from home, because teams come and we find the gaps. Where at home, I believe that teams come on and we try and attack them, where they set back defensively and we try and attack them, and then they get us on the counter and stuff, and then we make mistakes. You think the two goals against Gillingham were from defensive mistakes from two players that have been brilliant from us all season, since January, Seddon and Ramsdale. Two mistakes that they wouldn't normally make in a game.
That's true. Right, for me, I think King's Meadow, the pitch and everything is so nice. And we don't play so much long ball as we do when we're away from home. And most of our goals away from home, certainly in the recent matches, have come from your long ball route one kind of way.
Yeah, and I saw what you put together on Twitter, and that shows that Hansen, the goal, is a long ball. But I think we do mix it up in that way sometimes. But the pitch at home is beautiful, and we try and play football on it. The problem you're going to get as well is you're going to get teams come down to us, Sunderland, the good teams, Barnsley, who are going to be better than us, technically, are going to be brilliant on that pitch. Where the other teams like Accrington, who play on absolute bogs, are going to come down, and they're going to struggle against us if we move the ball around quickly and we get it from defence to attack quick. But against the better teams, they are going to be like, this is brilliant. This is like a training ground for us. This is the best pitch we've played on.
I wanted to ask both you guys about Aaron Ramsdale, because when I last presented this show a couple of weeks ago, your colleague from the 9 Years podcast was speaking glowingly about Ramsdale, saying he could be a future England international. Maybe put a bit of the kiss of death on him because he's made a couple of mistakes since then. Where do you stand on that? Is that inevitable that a young goalkeeper is going to make some errors? Or do you
Manuel Neuer had a shocking World Cup, but he's still Germany's number one. You know, people make mistakes. He'll bounce back.
I agree with what Kevin said. Kevin said he was the best goalkeeper that we've had at Wimbledon, and I agree with that. We had Long, who I thought was brilliant as well. But yeah, I think Ramsdale will play. He'll be Premier League goalkeeper, and he will play for England one day.
I hope not for a couple of seasons, so at least he can stay with us for a bit.
I actually find it a good thing that he's made a couple of mistakes. It's cost us one game. We got 3 points, but it's good for us, hopefully, is that Bournemouth see it and think he's a young keeper.
That is
logic,
isn't it?
He's made a few mistakes. Let's keep him on loan at Wimbledon next year for his development. He's doing enjoying it, and he is a young keeper. He needs to develop.
There could be an in-air at Bournemouth, because Artur Boric had been instated as the number one. He was dropped yesterday at the age of 39. Asmir Begovic came back in, so I think they will be keeping a close eye on Ramsdale.
Yeah, I've heard that Bournemouth are having big problems with their goalkeepers in terms of Eddie Howe not having much belief. But Bournemouth have the money to go off and purchase a nice third choice goalkeeper from Arsenal or something like that.
Just about to say, there's three goalkeepers at Burnley, and they're not going to be able to, or four goalkeepers at Burnley, they're not going to be able to keep all of them. So,
Jack Butland at Stoke, maybe.
Bournemouth have money to spend, so they might get a first keeper in and then get him, Ramsdale, to come in as second. But, or they might look at it and go, well, we need further development, and if we stay in League One, great place to come down and play his football. He's enjoying it. Wally's getting good stuff out of him, so why not?
So definitely
the M3 as well.
Definitely no question for you guys that Ramsdale's place should be in any kind of jeopardy after these mistakes.
No,
we haven't got a goalkeeper to push him either, unfortunately. But there's no second in our squad who's going to push Ramsdale at the moment. I think the New Zealand international, I can't pronounce his name, Tenozna. Mark, you're probably better than me, though.
Sorry,
the New Zealand goalkeeper. The young
Nick Tanev.
Tanev, that's the one. I can't pronounce
it. Something like that.
Yeah, Tanev. I think he could push number one spot. I don't think McDonald's good enough to be number one. So Ramsdale is the best goalkeeper we've had, and there's no one going to push him to get him out of that team.
So if for any reason...
All we can do as well is hope that McDonald really starts learning from Ramsdale. You know?
And I was going to say, Mark, if for any reason Ramsdale doesn't stay... beyond the end of the season, would that be a priority then, you think, for Wally Downes to get in an experienced keeper?
Absolutely, hands down. If, but that, well, again, that depends also what league we're in. If we're in League Two, I think McDonald will do a solid job. He won't be the outstanding goalkeeper of the league, but he'll do a solid job.
I disagree with that, Mark. I'd release McDonald at the end of the season. He's had a few years with us now. He's had his chance. He got in before we signed Ramsdale, and he was flappable on corners. Free kicks, he weren't great.
But that was also when confidence was seriously low throughout the whole season, right?
Yeah, but he hasn't done enough for me in the years that he's been with us where he's been thrown in. I think he's had one good game against Milton Keynes away, but that's it for me. I don't think he's pushed.
Lee, you sit on the fence too much and you're just too cutthroat.
But
which one is it?
If we can't get Ramsdale in the summer on loan again, we need a permanent goalkeeper to come in.
Difficult to plan for next season, is it? Because you guys have both independently said tonight, it depends what league we're in. It's like when you win promotion via the playoffs, you start your planning that much later than your rivals, because the budget is going to be dramatically different depending what division you're in. The players you're going to attract is going to be different. I suppose on that basis,
you see, I think Wally Downs has done it right in the January transfer window. He's picked players that are suited for both leagues.
Yep.
In the shape of McLaughlin and Donnelly, Connolly even. You know, he's got an eye. He's got a real good eye for players that could play very, very good football in League One or excellent football in League Two. So I think he's got a nice fat list of players that he would want to attract in the summer, regardless of which league we're going to be in.
Mark, I totally agree with you. I think he signed players for next season. McLaughlin and Connolly for next season, whatever league we're in. My only problem with whatever league we're in is the players that we have to get rid of. Say we have to release a Quezzi or a Hansen because they're too injury prone and we can't afford to have them on higher wages in League Two. But yeah, it is hard when you don't know what league you're going to be in, especially with our budget. We got a low budget, everyone knows that, and we have to plan now for what league. Look at last year, we started planning for both. We knew we were going to be in League One. We upped the budget. And that got us nowhere at the end of the day. So we do need someone, like you said, Wally, who's got an eye for a player. Yep.
Mark, thanks for calling up tonight and giving us your views on all things Wimbledon. This, of course, is the Wimbledon Fan Show. Lee Finch from the 9 Years podcast is with me, Alex Crook, in the studio. We're going to be taking a look at the relegation battle in more detail between now and 10 o'clock.
This is Love Sport.
You are listening to the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Don't forget you can get in contact via Facebook, Twitter or on Instagram at Love Sport Radio is our handle for all of those. You can give us a call as well, 0208 7020 558 if you have a view on anything Wimbledon between now and 10 o'clock on this Sunday evening. Just a general League One chat if we can digress slightly from your beloved Dons. EFL Trophy Final today, Checkatrade Trophy Final, much maligned competition. 85,000 turned up at Wembley, a record for the Football League Trophy, as it's of course more commonly known. Great game as well. Pompey 2, Sunderland 2. Sunderland took the lead, Pompey equalised, and then went to extra time. Pompey looked like they won it. Great goal from Jamal Lowe, of course, they plucked from non-league. Sunderland equalised right at the end of extra time, and in the end it was settled by a missed penalty from Lee Cattermole. I'm sure a lot of fans around the country delighted in his misfortune. I thought it was a great advert for League One. You're still not having the competition.
No, I'm really disappointed that 85,000 people turned up. I wish it was an empty Wembley. I'd have liked to have seen it if it would have been, say, us versus Chelsea under-21s in the final there, or even Portsmouth versus Newcastle under-21s, and then see how many people turn up. I don't like what they've done to the trophy. If it was League One and League Two teams, brilliant. And fair play to Portsmouth and Sunderland taking so many people down there.
They've been through adversity.
Had hard times. And to be fair, they've got low budgets. So it's good that the low-budget teams are doing well in these trophies. You know, with McGreedy playing for them and Hawkins, they should be buying these trophies anyway. So it disappoints me that they had 85,000 there today, really. So
does the fact that none of the under-23 teams have made it to the final so far, Is that not a bit of a victory for the smaller clubs? Does that not appease you somewhat?
It does. But then, we've been boycotting it all season pretty much. Most clubs have. I think we had the lowest ever attendance for one of our games. I don't go to them. I know a lot of people that don't. And
you wouldn't go to the final?
Nah, I wouldn't go to the final. No, I've been to Wembley to watch Wimbledon win in a playoff game. So that's enough for me. And I'd rather go to Wembley when it means something than a Checkatrade trophy when Chelsea under-21s. Say it was Chelsea under-21s today. They were playing Cardiff today. So how many of their fans would have gone along to watch the under-21s in a final?
Yeah, decent.
I doubt there would have been many there. So it would have been 40,000 Portsmouth and then about 20 guys in the Chelsea end. Yeah, I'm just disappointed that there was 85,000 there. Hopefully they scrapped the under-21s, under-23s out of it. Because they will get to a final soon. Chelsea's under-23s are decent. They beat us in it. Man City's got a good under-23 team.
Yeah, Tottenham. Arsenal.
Yeah, and Man U is going to start. I reckon they'll throw teams in there soon. They'll see the benefits. And it just, for me, it gives the EFL and them more leverage to then throw under-21s teams into League
Two. Well, they'll be delighted with the two teams that made up the final. I mean, that was guaranteed to be the two biggest attendances.
Yeah, they would have. Yeah, they would have loved that. That's what I mean, and that's why I said kind of a little sarcastic comment about the two teams, the highest budgets in the league, got to the final. Do you know what I mean?
They're not in the automatic promotion places, though.
No, they're not. And Luton and Barnsley are flying, to be fair, but. Yeah, I think it's going to give the people in charge more leverage to say, look, we need to start putting under-23 teams into lower league football, Conference, League Two, and that's not what we want to see. We love our game the way it is. There's teams that go up and fans go up and down the country watching their teams, and I don't want to be going to Sunderland under-23 game in a League One or League Two fixture.
Because there was talk also of putting under-23 teams, as you say, in the Football League. That seems to have, you know, been brushed to one side somewhat now.
Yeah, and I think that's the reaction to the fans not bothering to go watch the EFL Trophy or the Chequered Trade Trophy. I don't think people want it that way. So for me, I think that's why it's on the slow burner. But with attendances like this, it gives the EFL now, they'll come out and say, well, look, it's been a successful tournament. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Under-23 teams have got this far. They beat Wimbledon here. They won here. And, yeah, I think they'll do what they can now to try and get League Two to submit some under-23 teams.
Interesting. At Love Sport Radio, if you share Lee's view on that, or if you maybe have a different viewpoint, Gary Fletcher has tweeted us, does Lee think the flat atmosphere doesn't help with our home form, but away from home it's singing for 90 minutes non-stop?
Yeah, I sit with Gary. Gary stands in front of me, and he's where we stand is about 15, 20 of us who sing most games. But you'll find up and down the country, most home teams, the atmosphere is not as good.
That goes right the way up to the Premier League, doesn't it?
You get a lot of families go, you get a lot of people going to see their mates and they're talking and stuff. It's a lot different home atmosphere than when you go to an away atmosphere. You've been on the train for a couple of hours or you've been on a coach, you've had a few drinks. You're there for one reason, that's to enjoy the day out, get the points and come back again. When you're at home, it's a lot more relaxed kind of thing. And I think that's as I said, it's up and down the country. It's not just Wimbledon that has a poor home atmosphere.
What can you do to change that? I mean, I know some of the bigger clubs in the land have introduced singing sections and the like.
It's hard at Kingsmere because we'll be moving soon. We'll be moving back to Plough Lane. So the club have asked fans for their opinions and asked for what we can do to get the atmosphere going at New Plough Lane. But a singing section could be where I'd like to see safe standing brought in. That'd be quite good across the, but it costs a lot of money for clubs again with low budgets to bring that in. I think that works well. Shrewsbury have it, and you're going to get a better atmosphere, stuff like that. Other people just sit. A lot of people go to games to sit down and watch the football, where you'll get some people want to just stand up and sing all day. They're not bothered about what's going on the pitch, and then they'll remember the goal and that's it really. I think, as I said, in our section, we've got about 20 fans who do sing all game, and it is quite good. We're right next to the away end as well, so it does make it a little bit back and forth, and that's always good. So hopefully, when we get the new ground, they'll put some hardcore Wimbledon fans right near the away end, so you just get that banter and a little bit back and forth.
Tell you what, the first half an hour has absolutely flown by. Lee from the 9 Year Podcast is going to be staying with us here on the Wimbledon Fan Show all the way through until 10 o'clock tonight. Still plenty to discuss in the final hour of the programme. But first, just before 9 o'clock, let's get your latest news headlines.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
You're listening to the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport with me, Alex Crook and Lee Finch from the 9 Years Podcast. Lots to discuss still between now and 10 o'clock, not least the intense battle for survival at the bottom of League One. Oxford in 12th place at the moment. They've had a bit of an upturn. I was with their assistant manager, Sean Derry, earlier today. They are 7 points clear at the moment of Walsall in 21st position. But that just gives you an idea, really, a reflection of just how tight it is at the bottom of the table. First of all, you'll be glad to know Kaz has tweeted in, Lee. She says, couldn't agree more with the nine-year podcast on Love Sport Radio just now, talking about the Checker Trade Trophy. And, of course, your disappointment, really, that so many fans from Portsmouth and Sunderland did attend that final at Wembley. Portsmouth, I know, were allowing season ticket holders to purchase 6 tickets at a time.
Yeah, well, that's they're always going to fill it up then. I was very surprised to see 80,000. I thought they'd take numbers down there. As I said, they have had bad times previously. So a day out at Wembley, they haven't had fun for ages, to be fair. So fair play. But
I think maybe that's the way to look at it. Take the day in isolation and forget about the competition. I know a lot of Pompey fans didn't care if they lifted the trophy or not. I think Sunderland actually wanted to win it a bit more than they did, to be honest.
Yeah, you could tell that with the Sunderland fans in Trafalgar Square yesterday. Yeah. Have you seen the pictures of Trafalgar Square? It was incredible. Unreal. And it's great, but it is a Checker Trade Trophy where the EFL are trying to bring in, and especially after what them clubs have been through, would they want now Chelsea under-23s playing in League One against them when they believe they're Premier League teams?
Yeah.
In their heads, they want to be in the Premier
League.
They're
clawing their way back up or trying to.
Yeah, that's what. And now it's just, I think their argument just gets done over because they have now gone 85,000 there. And as I said previously, the EFL chairman will be rubbing his hands thinking.
It'll be interesting to see when the trophy gets underway again in August. You know, will they boycott the early rounds again? It would be very hypocritical if they did.
Well, they might go to the first one and then parade the trophy around the pitch and stuff. Yeah. Because, unless they're going to open top bus it and
round dear, that would be embarrassing.
But unless they don't get promoted, if they get promoted, they might do both, won't they? Playoff win and then Checker Trade Trophy open bus. But yeah, I was just disappointed to see that many people there. So
I was going to ask you about that, actually, the top end of the table. Luton Town, unbelievable run they've been on. 86 points now from their 40 games. They are 7 ahead of Barnsley, 12 ahead of Portsmouth, do have a game in hand. Sunderland on 73 points, have 3 games in hand over Barnsley. If they were to win all of those, they would move into the automatic promotion places. Is it Luton and one other for you?
I think it's Luton and Barnsley. Yeah, Barnsley, I've said it previously on here that Barnsley were the best team I've seen all season.
Just having a bit of a wobble. I saw them on TV against Walsall, weren't impressive, 1-0. They've drawn 3 of their last 4.
Walsall were brilliant that day. They didn't pick up the points. But yeah, they grounded up and they got the 3 points. Luton, I think it's just clicked for Luton. I don't think, if you look at their squad, you wouldn't say it was the best squad in League One.
That would be Sunderland, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know about Sunderland. I think it's an ageing squad. Like, they have got players like McGeady, but if he's
spent
on
£4 million on Will Grigg,
£30,000 a week, and you've got Lee Catamol on £25,000 a week, they should be doing stuff. So I kind of rule them out because they should be up there. But Barnsley, I think, are the best team I've seen. Luton, I think it's just clicked with Luton. Their strikers are scoring, their midfield, they're hard to score against. Who else is in there? Portsmouth are in there.
Portsmouth are third. I mean, they were running away with it, weren't they, until the turn of the year.
Doncaster looked like they were going to slip out of it, and then we beat them, and then they done us a favour yesterday, I think.
Charlton have been on a brilliant run, but just can't seem to get any higher than fifth.
Charlton are the form side in London, I think, at the moment, in the last 12 games. They're just above us in the form table. Yes, it is. We've still got to play Luton away, and hopefully by that time they're champions.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be taking it a little bit easier. Play the kids. They, you know what I mean, they're going to have to. Hopefully they'll win the league a week before we play them. So then they have a week long celebrations, and then we can go up there and
you want them to be hungover, basically.
Well, it was due to be Bank Holiday Monday, which has ruined it for me now. It's a Tuesday night.
Is that over the Easter weekend, is it?
It was meant to be, yeah. They're on Sky, I think, on the Tuesday. They're on TV on the Tuesday. And then, on the Saturday, not on the Tuesday. Mm-hmm. On the Saturday, and then they've moved our game now from Bank Holiday Monday to the Tuesday.
That's disappointing from a fan's perspective, isn't it?
Yeah, because we got Bristol Rovers on the Friday, and then we play Luton. So if we beat Bristol, it would have been great to go Luton on the Monday, but now we're going to have to go up there after work on a Tuesday night. But hopefully they'll win on the Saturday to win the league, and then we play them on Tuesday.
Incredible to think there's only 6 games to go. But you're saying Luton and Barnsley will be the top 2.
Yep.
I mean, the playoff final could well be a repeat of what we've seen today in that competition you don't like.
I don't fancy Sunderland to win the playoffs. I just don't think... I've seen them twice against us, and they've not looked great, even though they've beaten us twice. Portsmouth looked good. Doncaster with the striker, what's his name?
Marquise.
He was brilliant against us. Until he got sent off, Donny would have won that game if it weren't for him getting sent off. He's solid for them. Barnes, I think Luton and Barnsley and then one other. And good luck to them, really, because they're just lucky that we didn't bring in Wally Downs in November, because we would have been in that playoff shout, and I would have fancied us then.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, in terms of your end of the table, Bradford gone?
I'd say yes, but then we were 10 points adrift, but then that was a few games ago. There's only 6 games to go. I think Bradford are gone. I think Accrington will go. I think Rochdale will go. And I also think, at the moment, just on form alone, I think Wickham will go. Yeah, I think Wickham are struggling big time. Accrington are struggling.
Accrington have been on a dreadful run, haven't they, since the turn of the year?
Yeah, they're on a terrible run at the moment. Their form is so bad, and I think their budget's now having an effect on them. You know, I think it happened to us when we are lucky. Before Christmas, we would have said that Accrington were going to be in the playoffs, to get in the championship, and everyone would have been going, "Wow, Accrington could be in the championship." And then since they've just...
That would be the worst thing that could happen to them. Now, I mean, we've seen it with Yeovil, who are now in danger of dropping out of the Football League because they overachieved by getting to the championship.
Yeah,
lost their best players, couldn't compete financially.
And it could happen to Accrington now. They are overachieving with being in League One. I think their chairman would probably agree with that. They have overachieved. If they do go down, they could lose a few of their players. To the Rochdales and Oldhams and Berries, because Oldham and Bury look like they could come out of League Two. They have some good players, but yeah, I think they're struggling. I think Wickham will go down. They can't buy a win at the moment either. Looking at the table, Scunthorpe were in big trouble. It depends on who they appoint full time as manager. Bristol Rovers are still down there, and they've still got to play all the teams around them as well. They've got to come to us on Good Friday. Southend, I haven't even mentioned Southend yet, and they're on dire for, and they ain't got a manager.
They haven't got a permanent manager yet.
They're looking at Barrett from Millwall, who played for us for a little while. Ex-Southend boy.
Yeah,
he's first team coach at Millwall. They're looking to bring him in. But Southend fans, I know, because I live in Southend, they don't want back. They want an experienced manager to come in. They don't want someone.
Difficult to attract one when you're one place above the bottom four, though, in League One, isn't it?
They have got money, though. Yeah. So if manager comes in, he knows he's going to have money. He knows if they go down now, it's not his fault. And then if he does get some money, he could bring them up. And then one season, he's got them promoted, and then you kick on from there. But yeah, they're in trouble. I really do think they will get out of it. The way Walsall played against Barnsley the other day, I think they'll get out of it.
Just missed too many chances, didn't they?
Yeah, Rochdale could get out of it. They always seem to. They could be 10 points bottom now, and they'll probably still get out of it like they did last year. So Bradford are gone, and then I think Accrington, Wickham and Rochdale, I think they will just slip.
That's going to be one of my questions for later in the programme. You've beat me to the punch. I will be asking you next, though, Lee. Will it be a failure if Wimbledon don't stay up from this position? Stay with us.
Love Sport.
Welcome back to Love Sport, the Wimbledon fan show with me, Alex Crook, 12 minutes past 9 on this Sunday evening. We are with you all the way through until 10 o'clock. Lee's had a few seconds there to think about my question just before the break. Given the revival, 4 wins from the last 5 games and the momentum that Wimbledon have built up, will it be a failure if you don't stay up now?
Oh, I'm torn on this because... Yes, I think it would be a failure if we didn't stay up now after the form and the position that we've got ourselves back into. You think a couple of months ago, we were relegated. Everyone thought that was it. After we lost to Burton and after we lost to Fleetwood at home, everyone said, that's it, we're relegated. Then we then go on a massive run and we win games. It's so hard to say, would it be a failure? Because
so important momentum at this stage of the season. We touched on it a bit already. Southend, 12 without a win. Accrington struggling since the turn of the year. Wickham, as you mentioned, in complete free fall. Walsall, for all their improvement against Barnsley, have lost 4 games in a row. They're going one way and seemingly you're coming the other.
And that's the thing. Momentum is the big word. Momentum is what we have behind us at the moment. And everyone knows when you're at the bottom of the league, luck and things like that go for you. There'll be something like, we'll get a lucky goal or something like that, and it go for the teams that are in momentum or in form because they're putting more pressure on teams, and then you get that luck. I just don't know if it would be a failure if we didn't stay up now, because we were in such a bad position before Wally came in. Wally would probably see it as a failure if he didn't keep us up. I think that's the kind of man he is. He would see it as a failure if we didn't come up now. I still think we are going to stay up. So it's not, I don't like saying, oh, failures now, because let's wait till we've 90 minutes is up against Bradford and where we are then, because by that time we could be mid-table. And at the end of the season, we'll be all going, well, what was the drama? Why was everyone panicking so much? We finished 12th.
Yeah, you could, yeah, couldn't you?
That's what I mean.
There's an old saying in football, it's the hope that kills you. And, yeah, and in many ways, if you did fall short now, it would be more agonising, wasn't it? Because as we've already alluded to at Christmas, you thought you were dead and buried already. You've got this renewed hope now with the run you've been on. If you were still to be relegated, that would be really devastating, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and you took the words out of my mouth. I was just about to say it's the hope that kills you. And that's what we've been saying for the last few weeks. Well, I said, when we were dead and buried, we were like, oh, that's it now. Let's just enjoy the rest of the season. Go on a few away trips. Let's just enjoy what's coming our way. League Two football would be fun. Who can we sign to get us back up? And then, boom, we win 4 wins in a row. And we're like, well, wait a minute. We could stay up now. And then you lose to Gillingham. And then it's like, well, that's us done again. And then we win away to Scunthorpe. All the results go our way, and we're like, wow, we are actually gonna stay up from our position. And I think that would beat Rochdale staying up last year. I think we were dead and buried. As I said, we were 17 points behind Scunthorpe about a month and a half ago. We were 17 points behind them. We are 4 points behind them now, and yeah, and these teams can't buy a win around us, and we've got to play them. And as I said previously and earlier, teams will not want to play us at the moment. We've got a fully fit squad. Everyone's raring to go. We can change formations, squad, depending on who we're playing. A lot of teams can't do that. They've got injuries. They've got suspensions. They're tired. We can mix it up now. We've got 3 strikers. Kwezi Appiah is coming back. That's 4 strikers. I know a lot of people...
He scored, didn't he, on his international return?
Yeah, he did. He got 45 minutes and scored. Not a lot, but I wasn't overly happy on it. Him going over to Ghana.
Because he was injured.
Well, apparently he was injured. Yeah. He comes back to play the big TV games. He's suddenly fit to go to Ghana. It might have been taken out of his hands. He's been told he has to go.
I think you do, don't you? Because if you don't report, then you can't play for your club anyway. So maybe they were thinking, well, he may as well go.
Yeah, maybe they were thinking, go, get some minutes. Hopefully get some minutes out there and then come back fitter. I don't know. His reaction as well wasn't great. He started blocking a load of fans on Twitter when they said a few comments to him about not liking the fact that he's gone out there. Problem is, when you're that injured and you're not playing and then you just go off and play for Ghana, it's the same as when he was injured and then he come back to play against West Ham. And then people forgot about it because of the result and stuff. But he is a good finisher. We could deal with him right now. Coming on, he can finish, he's quick. We've got 4 good strikers now, and that's what we needed. At the start of the season, we only had 2. Now we've got 4, and that's what you need when you're down the bottom.
Quick question from our erstwhile producer, maybe trying to wind you off a bit here with this one. How disappointing would it be to go down and MK Dons? Are we allowed to mention them when this show come up? They're, of course, 2nd in League 2, had a good away win yesterday at Forest Green.
Yeah, we'll call them their full name, and I've got to be careful what I do call them.
Milton Keynes?
Them up the road, most people say. And yeah, there's a lot. Yeah, there's a words I can't say on radio that I'd like to say about them. Yeah, that I think that would be the gutting thing. I think more than a failure that us go down, but if we go down and they come back up 1 year after we replace them, you know, let them come up as much as they want because they're a failure of a club anyway. But if we go down and they come up, then yeah, that would disappoint me big time. Yeah, I just hope that we stay up because they look like they are going to come up, unfortunately.
Yeah, on a good run with Paul Tisdale, who in fairness is a decent manager at that level, isn't he? As he proved for many years with Exeter City.
I don't think he's doing that well. I think he should be automatic. The teams around him, they've done... I don't want to talk about them.
No, let's move on. We got some tweets here. Billy Lewis says, Chips Finch is doing well tonight. Well done, mate. Can't believe there are still fans. He's put that in single quotations, saying that Wally isn't the man for the job. Is that the case? Isn't the man for the job long term? Wally and Glenavin still grit into this team. Do you think they'll stay next season, relegation or not? That's an interesting question.
Yeah, that's a great point from Billy. There are some fans, I do believe that... There was a couple of weeks ago, I was here again and I said that there's some fans out there who want Wally to foul still, just to be proven right. I think now, though, with the form that we're in and the run that we're in, no fan can say anything against Wally. I think he is turning it. There's people that are eating a lot of humble pie. I think we're going to have to order a lot of humble pie into the bars and stuff for the fans, because you can't moan, you can't gripe about our form. Our form is playoff form. Our form is promotion form. And yeah, Wally has turned it around. Will they stay? Yeah, 100%. I think they'll stay whatever league we're in. I honestly said it again a couple weeks ago. I honestly believe that Wally's going to step up into a director of football role. Glyn will take over the reins as the first team manager. And then Nick Laws, the Scunthorpe guy that we've got in for our scouting, I think he will. Nick Dawes. I'm so bad with names. It's unreal. Nick Dawes will come in and be assistant manager, because that's what I believe will happen long term.
We were talking a couple of weeks ago. That appointment's almost been brushed under the carpet a little bit. They've not made a song or dance about it, have they?
No. What happened is he obviously come in before we could announce it. I think there was something going on with Scunthorpe and his contract there. It was apparently going to happen. Then it didn't happen for months, and then the fans got really annoyed because we don't get anything from the club saying what's happening. No, there's no update at all, which riles people right up. If you tell them something's going to happen, and then for months you just leave it. Then he come in, but if you read it exactly what they say is that he's come in to the summer. Mm. He's come in to put the processes in place, put all the software in place, put what Wally wants in place, and then he wants to get back into coaching and management. So maybe he's here just for the summer to get it all sorted, and then Wally's going to bring in another recruitment who can just sit there and make sure it works. And we've got all our scouts out there that Nick Dawes has done. But yeah, it's gone very quiet again. But hopefully that's because he's out there working and he's out there finding us players for League One or League Two, that they're going to be good enough for League One, but they're going to be happy to play in League Two.
Absolutely. Keep your tweets coming. Good question that from Billy at Love Sport Radio is the Twitter address. After the break, we're talking goals, goals, goals.
This is Love Sport.
You're listening to the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio, or via the website lovesportradio.com. You can call the studio as well tonight, 0208 70 20 558. I'm sure Lee from the 9 Years podcast will be keen to answer any of your questions. We have one here from Joe via Twitter. Walsall, Rochdale and Southend have the worst form since Wally took over here. Impossible to predict because a few teams will randomly string a few wins together.
Yeah, it's true. And that's why I was struggling earlier with the four I picked, in my opinion, who I think will go down. It is so hard to predict at the moment from, I'd say, Shrewsbury down to Bradford. So that's 15th down to 24th.
You think Oxford, with the run they've been on, Gillingham, who've picked up of late, and Plymouth, who had a nightmare first half of the season, you think they're all safe?
Yeah, I do. I think they're going to pick up enough points now. I think 52 points, I think you'll be safe on 52. Possibly a bit but lower than that, because there's so many teams involved and a lot of teams have to play each other. So I do believe Plymouth, Gillingham, Oxford will be safe. I do believe it's Shrewsbury downwards. And you can pick four from that. Well, I think three from that. I think Bradford are down. Six to go, and there's, 6 points off it?
I'm just trying to look, actually. Interesting. Going from bottom upwards, teams who've changed their managers over the course of the season. Bradford have.
Yep.
Rochdale fired Keith Hill, didn't they, recently?
Yep.
Wimbledon
yep.
have. Walsall?
No,
don't think they have.
Yates since Yates.
Southend have. Yep. Scunthorpe have. Accrington haven't.
Yep,
John Coleman's got
think
a job for life there. Yeah. Wickham, Gareth Ainsworth again looks pretty safe. Bristol Rovers have.
Yep,
and Shrewsbury have. Mm. So most of the teams down there have changed their manager without actually being able to pull clear of danger. What's that tell us?
Bradford have twice, I think.
Yeah,
Bradford have got rid of their manager twice. I think what it tells me is that a lot of teams leave it too late to change their managers. I think we left it way too late to change our manager. I think Neil's time was well up.
Wasn't it? Because of his affiliation with the club. But you can understand why they were a little bit reluctant.
I don't know.
No?
There's a lot of fans will disagree with me on this, but I know a few will agree. He had way too long, in my opinion, than we needed. If we had brought Wally in much earlier, it didn't even have to be Wally at the time. Anyone in much earlier, I think we would have been well out of trouble now. And I say, I think we'd have been pushing way up that league, higher up that league. I think a lot, look at Southend lost to us, then they got rid of their manager. You know what I mean? They should have done it before. Scunthorpe have only just got rid of their manager now with six to go. A new manager's got to come in with six games, a team in no form, no confidence, and try and switch it around. And that's what it tells me, is that managers have been left. They're leaving it too late to get rid of the managers.
The bizarre one in the Bradford case is that their new manager has only signed a contract until the end of the season.
Yeah, I don't like Gary Bowyer. Yeah. He's a decent manager. So he knows that if he doesn't keep Bradford up, he doesn't know what they're going to do next year. Again, we're talking about budgets and stuff like that. Bradford are struggling, I think, money-wise. So they might say, oh, you ain't going to have a bigger budget than we thought you were going to have. And then he could just go, okay, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go back to Blackpool or something, because they changed their manager. They get a new chairman in. Yeah, anything can happen in football. Well, I think we've asked Wally and Glyn are here for the long term, and hopefully that's how it stays.
Just looking at the number of goals scored, we flagged it up before the break. Wimbledon right down there, 36 goals only from their 40 matches. I think that's the lowest in the division, isn't it? We're Accrington next on 40. Is that a big concern for you going into the run-in?
Nah, not now. Not now that we've got everyone fit. As I said previously, we only had Piggott and he got injured. We only had... Who else did we have up front?
Piggott's got 13, isn't he?
Yeah.
Is that about right, or would you have expected more?
No, that's about right for Piggott. I expect more from Hanson and Quezzy, but they've both been injured. Jake Jervis came in and he's gone now, thank God. Hopefully we'll never see him again in a Wimbledon shirt. We've got...
You're being harsh tonight, aren't you? Or are you always like this?
I'm always like this. Well, this is what I've been told anyway. I'm always like this. But
I wouldn't want you marking my school homework, I tell you.
I'm always like this. Yeah, you've got to be harsh but fair, I believe. I pay a lot of money to go watch football and go watch Wimbledon. And yeah, we expect a team that are going to give 100%. That's all we want at Wimbledon. If you don't do that, then you're not welcome at the club. But... I the goals now, we're hard to beat now. We're shoring up defensively. I know I said to Mark earlier that we've made a few mistakes, but that's only because we've only lost two in the last 13.
Well,
14.
You've actually got the best defensive record in the bottom six in the table.
Yes, yeah. So the goals come from just defensive mistakes, not from the team being brilliant, other than a Barnsley or something like that. Gillingham, we've made two defensive mistakes and they went in at half-time 2-1. We could have been 2-0 up in that game. We had four shots yesterday against Scunthorpe, and one of them was a penalty miss. So we had four shots and we could have scored three goals. That's all that matters in football, is that you score one goal more than them. And defensively, we're better now. And what he knows, if we can go win a game 1-0, then we'll win the game 1-0. If we have to win the game 4-3, we'll try and win that game 4-3. And that's all that matters.
You mentioned earlier about the couple of players you signed in January, Shane McLaughlin and Dylan Connolly. I think it was Mark actually was talking about them. Just one goal between them since they came in. Would you have expected more from them?
They haven't played as much as we probably wanted them to play. Connolly came in, he'd come over from Ireland, so they're in their pre-season over there, so he's not going to be fully match fit straight away. So he didn't come into the team straight away. He came in against West Ham and everyone was like, wow, where has this kid been? Like, how has he not been playing for Dundalk in Ireland? But you look at their forums, they play a totally different system. They play a little bit more long ball. If you're a winger and you're just cutting out the midfield, that's not going to work. So for us, he's come in. He looks brilliant. And McLaughlin, I really do like. He's forward thinking. He's got... Every time he gets the ball, he looks to go forward with it. He's positive with it. And I do like him. And I think... Taking out the goals, we've got goal scorers in our team with Wordsworth can score. We've got our strikers now who are chipping in with goals, not just Piggott. Hanson's got three. Quezzy's got a couple goals he can score for. Levy looks lively.
Does he score enough goals, Quezzy Appiah, or does the fact that he's, you know, offers more from a footballing perspective make up for the lack of goals?
He offers more from a football. The problem with him, I think, I feel sorry for Quezzy because he could be a brilliant footballer, but he struggled with injuries. And it is harsh to say, but most teams, you don't want injury-prone players because they're not going to play enough games.
Especially when your squads are not particularly deep.
Especially, yeah, and budgets and lower league football. And I do feel sorry for him and the Hansons of this world because they are good footballers, but they struggle with injuries. Quezzy would score bucket loads, I believe, if he was fully fit and he could play 20 to 30 games a season. I think the most he's played is for us, and it's around about 15 in a season. That's not great if you're... I think before us, his most ever games he's played was 11 games in a season. That's not a lot of games when you're a professional footballer. So if he could play 30 games a season, I think he'd score 15, 20 goals for us. But he just doesn't play the games. He's just, unfortunately, too injury prone. But he's a highest paid player. Him and Hansen earn good money.
Yeah.
And you can't afford to have them in the squads on that kind of money.
That's Lee Finch from the 9 Years podcast with me, Alex Crook, in the studio tonight. Still half an hour of the Wimbledon fan show to come. Coming up next, we're going to be looking ahead to Accrington Stanley at the weekend.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice.
Welcome back to Love Sport and the Wimbledon fan show here. Lee is with me from the 9 Years podcast. I thought we would get a bit of reaction to this, actually, on Twitter, the debate about Neil Ardley. And Will Haynes has been in touch. He says, I agree the club got rid of Neil too late, but do you think the way people have treated him since his removal has been disrespectful, given that without Neil, we wouldn't even be in League One right now?
I get his point, but no, I don't believe we've been disrespectful to Neil, because I think what happened is that he did stay too long. So if he had gone out, previous managers like Dave Anderson, Terry Brown, they went out with their heads held high. They went out when they were on top. They knew that they were defeated, and that was it. They were like, right, I believe they went to the board and said, look, we've got to go. The board, I don't think the board have sacked anyone. I think it's the same with Neil. I think they had a meeting and said, look, Neil, you're struggling here. And I think he was really struggling. And the football was dire. It was hard to work. People didn't want to go to games. And once you get to that level, that's it as a manager. If people don't want to go and watch the football that you're putting out, then you're done. And I think that was the problem. I don't think people meant to be disrespectful to Neil. I just think that he went too late. If he had gone a little bit earlier, a little bit sooner, I think people would have held their hands and clapped him and gone, thank you very much for the job. But where he's left so late, it got a little bit bitter in the end, and it was just so hard to watch.
It's tricky, isn't it, when you appoint a club legend? I mean, Manchester United, a much higher level, might find this with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, that when you appoint a club legend, someone who obviously the fans hold in high esteem, when it starts to go wrong, it can be quite a bitter exit.
I think the difference with someone like Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is where he's been at the top level and stuff like that, I think he'll know when to hold his hands up and say, actually, look, this is Man United.
Managers don't quit, though, do they?
I know what you mean, but nowadays it's a different game, and I think someone's just got to take control. This is why I like Darrow at Peterborough a little bit. He's bought Ferguson back 2-3 times now because he knows what he's going to get out of him. But if he don't get results and stuff, he knows that he's going to go, right, you're gone.
Are you a fan of Chairman on Twitter?
A little.
Because he's very outspoken, yeah, on social media.
I wouldn't mind a little bit of presence from AFC Wimbledon on Twitter a little bit. I don't care how much the club shop are selling and if we've got roast beef on Saturday instead of chicken or something. I prefer a little bit of knowledge from our club. We don't get much from the club.
This goes back to the transparency issue that you were talking about earlier.
We don't get much as in comms from the club, but Chairman on Twitter, it's fine. I like the Accrington Chairman on Twitter. He's very knowledgeable. He doesn't push it too much. I think Darrow kind of does push it, but that's probably why I like him.
He likes a bit of spotlight, a bit of his own publicity.
And he's not our chairman, so he wanted to be, but he's not. And I like the fact that I can look at that and think, oh, yeah, he said something funny there, or oh, well said there. But as
you had the Fulham chairman. You came out and had a go at the fans earlier in the season. That never sits politically well.
What he said
well.
Was, probably just about crossing the line a little bit. But I think sometimes our club can be a little bit weak with stuff we'd like. With regards to Neil, I think we were weak. We did look at him as he is such a nice person. He'd done such a good job for us. And we didn't want... It's like when you're with someone that you love, but you know it's not working. And you love her, but you're not in love with her kind of thing. And then, I think that was the thing with Neil. We love him, but with regards to the football and stuff, it was totally falling out of love. And, it was time to go, and we left it way too late.
What response would he get if he was to return to the club, as a supporter and came and watched a game?
He was down at a game recently, I think. I don't think he got overly...
warmly received?
No, I don't think he did, but I can't remember the game. But I think if he came back, say he's Notts County team, they do stay in League Two, and we stay in League One, and we get them in the cup or something, or if we did go down, And I think he would get a reception. I think he would get a very good reception coming across the pitch. I do believe that we would give him that, and I think that's what he would deserve. But
will he be blamed if you get relegated? The blame will be laid at his door.
It's New Ardley's fault if we go down. It's New Ardley and the board's fault if we get relegated this season. That's why I couldn't. The question about fouling now is, you have to look before Wally and look. We lost 8 games in a row.
Yeah.
Lucky enough, Wally's come in and we've.
When should he have gone then?
For me, I think he would have gone. He should have gone last season. Plymouth at home, when we set up to defend against the bottom team, really right. defensive. Not even go after them at Wall. Just go for a 0-0 against the team bottom. We lost 1-0. This year, I think he possibly should have gone Haringey. Eight losses. I try and forget about the first half of the season. I really have tried to, because the second half is night and day.
Yeah.
And it's so much more positive now with the second half of the season.
With largely the same group of players, which suggests that
yeah.
it was the manager's fault.
Yeah, and you look, yeah, and Wally's brought in, Wally's found a formation, 3-5-2, and he said he don't really want to be playing 3-5-2. It's not a formation that when he came in he was going to play.
It's not a formation you often see in the lower divisions, is it?
And because of the injuries that we've had and the players that have been available to him, he's had to play that formation, and it's working. So now he can't, you can't change it, because we are doing so well with it. But yeah, player, I think he's getting the best out of Wordsworth. I think he's getting the best out of Heitigan. He's giving youth a chance as well, which Neil never did. Neil never gave youth a chance. There's no way Sibic would be playing now. No way Paul Calambi would be playing now. There's no way Heitigan would have been playing the game. He made a mistake the other week, so that would have been him gone for weeks. Neil never trusted the youth. Where Wally's going now, I'm not going to go buy a player. I'm going to give you a chance. And that's what we need. And they're showing up, and they're giving it. And that's what you want.
Stephen Hayward has been in touch via Twitter at Love Sport Radio, of course, is the address. Talking of Twitter, what's the opinion on the comments made towards Kezzy during the international break? I personally think they're disgusting, and I've tweeted about them, garnering varied support.
Yeah, I did mention this earlier, that Kezzy went on blocking lots of fans because of some Twitter comments. I don't know. Some of the comments... Twitter's a strange game nowadays, and it's funny. People think they can say whatever they want on Twitter. I've been one to give comments to players. I don't try and be abusive. I just try and be a bit sarcastic with them.
If I was a player, I wouldn't go anywhere near Twitter. Yeah, I can't see the upside.
No, I don't.
You're going to get abuse from opposition fans. You're going to get abuse from your own fans when you play badly. I don't see what you've got to gain. Unless you're a Harry Kane and you need to... you know, endorse yep. Nike products or something. I don't get it.
And they probably hire people to look after yeah. their Twitter for them yeah. because they've got PAs and stuff like that and members of their team. But lower league footballers, I don't... Yeah, as I said, I got like the AFC Wimbledon tweet and I just send them loads of GIFs, sarcastic GIFs and stuff like that on there. I don't try and be abusive, but it's just a bit of sarcasm and stuff like that. But some of the comments to Kezzy were a bit harsh. But then, as I said before, it's strange how he can be fit for... Ghana and he can be fit to play on TV, but then we don't see him for 4 weeks.
Yeah, it just doesn't send out the right image, does it?
No, it does. And that's the problem. And again, under the old regime, we were very weak with the players could do what they wanted. Mm. They could go out on a night out and they could put it all over social media. One of the things at the start of the season was we lost 8 games in a row and most of our team were on social media out having a laugh on the yeah. drink. Right? And we don't mind. But when you've lost 8 in a row, just keep it a little bit quiet.
Yeah.
Now,
again, nothing to gain from putting that on social media.
But now, if they're going out, great. You've won 15 games in a row or something. You're in great form. Enjoy that time. Do you know what I mean? The fans are fully... Wally has come in and he's... The fans were a little bit disconnected with the players yeah. under Neil. And as I said, I think that's where it left it too late with Neil. We were a bit disconnected with... Now, there's a big connection with the... And I think that's because of Wally. Wally's very, when he gets interviewed, he's very frank as well. He'll say it how it is.
He's old school, isn't
he? Yeah, and people like that. And I think he's like that with the players. Some of the players we have are old school footballers. Hansen's, he's a Northern lad. You've got Wordsworth, he's an experienced footballer. He's been around. They'd rather have it frank and just say, look, this is what we want you to do.
Yeah.
Than give them hundreds of instructions and then it just blows their mind of what they have to do on a Saturday.
That's Lee Finch from the 9-year podcast. You are listening to the Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. I'm Alex Crook, and after the break, we'll be speaking to Dan Jewell, who covers Accrington Stanley, Wimbledon's next opponent, of course, for BBC Lancashire. Love Sport. 17 minutes to 10 on a Sunday evening. This is the final part of your specially extended Wimbledon fan show. I'm Alex Crook, and Lee Finch from the 9-Year Podcast is with me in the studio tonight. I'm pleased to say Dan Jewell, who covers Accrington Stanley for BBC Lancashire, joins us on the line now. Accrington, of course, Wimbledon's next opponents, the next step in this great escape act. Dan, thanks for joining us.
No problem, chaps. Good evening.
Accrington, I would imagine, looking very nervously over their shoulders right now, 2 points above the dotted line.
Yeah, it's a very strange situation because they started the season so well, obviously coming up on a high as League Two champions, and that start to the season is now basically the cushion that has kept them from the perils of the bottom four. Now, as you say, only a couple of points away from there, another defeat at the weekend, back-to-back defeats now, and of course they're looking nervously over their shoulder. I think the strange thing about the League One situation at the moment is you could probably say that that applies to 7 or 8 teams, and that's not including the four that are already in the bottom four. So I'm not sure anything will become massively clearer, even if Accrington win a couple of games, because all the teams below them are capable of winning games just the same as they're capable of losing them. So I suspect that this is going to go right down to the wire. Lots of teams will be involved. And for teams like Accrington, I guess the aim is to be the top of that pack of teams that could well be dragged in.
What's gone wrong, particularly since the turn of the year? 2 league wins in 2019. What's the reason for that? Can you put your finger on it?
Well, I think if I could, I'd probably be earning significantly more money to be the manager of Accrington Stanley. But it's a strange situation because they've played quite well. And this is probably the item that's of the largest concern to Accrington fans, because you always hear teams too good to go down, teams who play too good football, all those kind of things. And at times, even during this bad run, they have been very entertaining. They've been 2 or 3 games, certainly, in that run of double figures where they've dominated and been the best side. Scoring goals has become a bit of an issue. Although Billy Key has 15, a lot of those have been penalties. Sean McConville's into double figures from the left side of midfield, which is creditable. But posing goal threat and taking chances in recent weeks certainly has been an issue. I think it's a bit of a vicious circle as well, because they went through a spell of making quite a lot of chances and not scoring. And that's affected confidence. And I think that has led to fewer chances being created, and therefore they have to be more clinical, which was the problem in the first place.
With the way the league is so concertinaed, you've mentioned that already, you're either playing teams who are going for promotion or who are your rivals in and around the relegation zone. And I'm just looking at your run-in. It's not the easiest, is it? Sunderland at home in that rearranged game on Wednesday night. Luton at home, Luton absolutely flying. And then Doncaster away and Portsmouth away in May. I think that Portsmouth game actually is the last game of the season, isn't it? They could be going for top two.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, a strange thing, and this was also the case in League Two, actually, when Accrington were champions last year, they tend to be better suited or to acquit themselves better against the teams who are up at the top of the division, who are more inclined to be a bit more open and the games be a little bit more to and fro and end to end. And it's been a real struggle against teams, particularly in the middle of the table, and teams that are struggling, especially at home, because Accrington's success under John Coleman in two spells has really been grounded on a fantastic home record. But because they were so good last calendar year, I think they only lost 2 league games in the entire calendar year, teams are coming to Accrington and playing in a different way and asking questions and saying, come on then, break us down. And they've now lost 3 home games in the league on the spin for the first time in nearly 6 years. So that is clearly an issue. I think there will be pivotal games coming up. But as we touched on earlier, there are so many teams who will still consider themselves involved in this. Just look at the 2 clubs that only last week sacked their managers because they were embroiled in this battle. That if we're talking about relegation 6-pointers, we might reach the stage where we're talking about either relegation or promotion 6-pointers in about half of the fixtures every weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for the neutral, but not so much if you're in and amongst it. Do you know much about Wimbledon? Can you pick out any danger men that you think Accrington will have to pay particular attention to?
Well, I've seen a lot of Wimbledon over the years when they've been in the same division as Accrington in League Two over the, and then obviously getting promoted and going up through the playoffs a few years ago. Earlier in the season, I think Wimbledon played Accrington at a point where things were especially disappointing in what's been a fairly disappointing season so far. I wasn't particularly impressed on that day, but it's the nature of the league again, isn't it? You can see a team on one occasion and you can see them 3 or 4 days later in midweek and they'll be absolutely fantastic. With my Radio Lancashire hat on, I watch quite a lot of Blackpool and Fleetwood in this division as well, and they're exactly the same. They can be really poor 1 week and absolutely terrific a few days later.
And to flip it around, anybody in the Accrington team in form at the moment? You mentioned Billy Key perhaps is struggling of late. No player in double figures in terms of goals this season.
Yeah, well, I mean, Billy Key isn't in double figures in terms of open play, but if you add his penalties in, he's in there with double figures. He's the figurehead, the sort of famous name and the famous face in League One and League Two circles. There are some other players who have caught the eye. There's a young defender called Ross Sykes, who's only just turned 20, who's had some Premier League clubs looking interested in him. He's come through the club's academy system, so obviously the fans are particularly fond of him. And this has been his breakthrough season. He's scored a couple of goals as well, a big rangy centre-half. They have a lot of nice footballers, a lot of good footballers, Accrington, and that's possibly a slight concern. If you're going to be embroiled in a relegation dogfight, the two wide players are terrific. Sean McConville and Jordan Clark both create plenty and weigh in with their fair share of goals. But they have to find a way of getting firing. And coinciding with this sticking the ball in the back of the net problem, defensively, things have not been quite right. He's chopped and changed his goalkeeper between Dimitar Evtemov, the former Burton goalkeeper, and Johnny Maxted, who came to the club from non-league football. They've gone 10 games without a clean sheet now. So I think they would give quite a great deal for a clean sheet at the moment. So we might not be watching too many defensive masterclasses.
We were talking earlier, myself and Lee in the studio, about the number of managers down at the bottom of the table, who have changed their manager. Go up or stay down, the Accrington manager just about has about the safest job in football, doesn't he?
Yeah, there's about as much chance of John Coleman getting sacked as there is of me winning Britain's Best Groomed Man, and I am a very scruffy man.
enough said, I suppose. I'm intrigued by this game against Sunderland because, of course, they had a disappointing result today, losing on penalties to Portsmouth in the Football League Trophy final in front of 85,000 at Wembley. I know your chairman's had a lot to say about that particular competition. But Sunderland, you went up there earlier in the season, back in February. You were 2-0 up at the Stadium of Light, drew 2-2 in the end. As you say, they've shown Accrington that they do play better against better opposition. Could this be a good time to catch Sunderland, maybe, on the back of that defeat?
I think potentially it could. And I mean, I'm not sure that the context of it is necessarily that important, because you mentioned that game at the Stadium of Light. Accrington were excellent and Sunderland were, by their own admission, extremely fortunate to get anything from the game. You kind of gloss over the fact that they've actually already played each other at the Crown Ground for 70-something minutes this season before the heavens opened, the monsoons came and the match was abandoned. And
what was the score at that point? 1-1, yeah.
It was 1-1. So they've played twice for almost two full games and there's been very little to separate them. I think possibly with the Wembley exertions this weekend, for the players, that's an obvious situation to think about. But I think also for the supporters, a lot of Sunderland fans will already have come to Accrington for the game that was rained off. I'm not sure all of those will make the trip for a rearranged game on a Wednesday night after they've just been to Wembley. So possibly that could make it a little bit easier for Accrington. Personally, I have a sort of gut feeling that being really welcoming to away supporters and trying to, you know, encourage large away followings, which is something that Accrington have very consciously done this season, which is to be commended because so many clubs don't do it, I think may have had a knock-on effect on how hostile it is in terms of going there atmosphere-wise, because they get big away followings and it's sometimes almost a 50-50 split. So that may well make a difference on Wednesday night, but I'm pretty sure the Sunderland fans will still travel in pretty significant numbers.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how that one pans out. Looking further ahead to the game against Wimbledon at the weekend, the one we're focusing on for obvious reasons, what would be your score prediction for that?
Banana skin time in League One, isn't it? I know that things have definitely improved in terms of the outlook for Wimbledon. Without knowing what the result is in Accrington's game on Wednesday night, it's very difficult to know what Accrington is going to turn up. If Accrington can get a result against Sunderland, then I would fully expect them to get a bit of momentum and a bit of confidence back and go to Wimbledon and stand a very strong chance of winning the game. If this poor run continues, if they get a poor result or a poor performance against Sunderland, then I think Wimbledon have got every chance of getting something against them and turning them over, because at the moment they are probably as fragile as I've seen them in probably about 10 years of watching them.
Wow, incredible. Dan, thanks very much for joining us tonight, sharing your opposition views, and we'll speak to you next season, hopefully, with both teams still in the same division.
That'd be nice, yeah.
Cheers, Dan.
That was Dan Jewell, who covers Accrington Stanley, Wimbledon's next opponents for BBC Lancashire. You were shaking your head there when he was making his predictions, as I would expect you to.
Well, no, it's not the prediction I'll shake my head. I think, with regards to his point about Wimbledon when we played Accrington, we're a totally different beast now to when we played up in Accrington. We lost 2-1 up there, and we're a totally different team now. I think people are looking at the league table and seeing Wimbledon in third from bottom and not really looking at our form and thinking how good we are playing at the moment.
That could play into your hands, though, if opposition managers are thinking like that, and opposition players maybe.
I don't think managers and opposition players look that way. I just can't see it. I know fans do. Fans, you look at the league table and think, oh, Bradford, they're going to be easy because they're bottom now. But they could still turn you over. I just think at the moment, with our momentum, with our fully fit squad, obviously Dan doesn't know much about Wimbledon's squad and the new players that we've brought in and stuff like that. So I do expect us to win on Saturday. And it's a must win now for both teams still, because if we don't win and they win, they move, what is it now, they're 2 points, that'd be 5 points ahead of us.
But equally, if they lose to Sunderland, as you would probably expect them to, given their form and the fact Sunderland are going for promotion, one of their games in hand, and you beat them, you're level on points.
Yep, and I disagree with his point again about Sunderland coming off the back of the defeat today. It's a Checker Trade Trophy game. They would have wanted to win that.
Yeah.
So now what do? They go on Wednesday night and they have to win that now.
Yeah.
And big teams win big games, and if they want to get promoted and they've got... they've got Will Griggs, they've got McGeady's, they've got big players. I do take on his point about the away fan situation. We beat them in the playoff up there and they let Wimbledon have the whole away end and everything, and there was hundreds of us, like thousands.
Which is great for the coffers. But
it's good, but you've got to think of the atmosphere that away team. And I still think Sunderland will sell out Accrington. I think they'll sell out every game this year.
It's not that far in terms of how far they've had to come to Wembley on a Sunday afternoon.
I think there's teams like teams like Sunderland, there's teams like Plymouth, there's teams like Portsmouth. They will sell out every game they go to. Don't matter if it's a Tuesday night, Saturday, up anywhere. They'll travel whatever happens, and I think they will travel. And hopefully they can pick up 3 points Sunderland, and then they're not scoring many goals at the moment, Accrington, and we're defensively looking good. So, yeah, I can see it being 3-1 us on Saturday.
Confident prediction there from Lee. A quick word on Anthony Wordsworth. Haven't talked about him yet. How important has he been in your recent run of form?
He's been so important. When we first signed him at the start of the season, I raved about him big time, because I live in Southend, so I know quite. He played for Southend, and he's one of them players that you want playing for you, but you don't like him when he's against you, kind of thing. He's got that kind of attitude on the pitch and stuff. And at the start of the season, he struggled a little bit, I think. I don't think he got on great with Neil Audley. I think where he could do whatever he wants. I think now with Wally, he's got a manager that he knows that he can't take the mickey with. But he will get a little bit of leeway here and there. And his delivery is brilliant. I think he's fully fit now, where, again, at the start of the season, I think he was out. I think he had a personal issue as well at the start of the season. Missed a few games. And he was one of the players that was disconnected with the club. I think he's come in now and everyone absolutely loves him. And he gets what Wimbledon's about. And I hope that he signs on for next year as well. I really do want him in any league that we play in. I think he's brilliant for us. Hopefully, if we're not going to have Will as captain, then I think Wordsworth should step in.
Lee, thanks very much for your company tonight. The hour and a half has absolutely flown by. That's Lee Finch from the 9-Year Podcast, talking all things Wimbledon. Enjoy the game against Accrington Stanley at the weekend. Thanks to all of you who've got involved via Twitter and on the phones tonight. I've been Alex Crook. Enjoyed your company. Join us tomorrow, 6:30 a.m. Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast here on Love Sport.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.